rush hour.
This is rush hour.
This is rush hour.
8 a.m.
Rush hour starts a little earlier in Thailand, actually, as you probably can see from the traffic when you got up. There's a lot of people going to work early.
Looks like there's a line this morning.
Yeah.
Yeah, Tiger. For you, same?
Yeah.
Colds?
Let's do
That's how we do it.
All right, let's do it.
Tiger and Thai song. Look at the cup. See that?
It's incredible.
See that condensed milk go in there? That is the taste of Thai iced tea.
It always comes out that muddy color, which is kind of the color of our rivers, you know, when it rains, that's the kind of general color that you see streams flowing.
So it's kind of
Thai iced tea.
It's an homage to the city.
Kind of, yeah.
That bird call you hear is coming from an Asian koel, but the real soundtrack of Bangkok is the internal combustion engine, the mopeds and the Mazda 2s. It is a city in perpetual motion, so just be sure to look both ways before crossing. This is the first of three episodes we'll be running from Thailand, right here in Bangkok and up north in Chiang Mai. I'm starting off with this man, Tom Waller, a Thai-Irish filmmaker who took me for a classic Bangkok morning fix, that's roadside Thai iced tea, and chatted with me at his home studio about a big film he's making, The Cave. It's the only Thai-led film in the works about the dramatic cave rescue in Chiang Rai last year. Tom and I talked about smog, tea, and filmmaking in the Kingdom of Thailand. This is Nathan Thornburg, and you're listening to The Trip, drinking with exceptional people around the world. All right, here we go. So it is a beautiful morning in Bangkok, rush hour around 8 o'clock. Beautiful despite the fact that it's a smog out and your daughters are here.
They should be at school, but they're not now because the government's decided that this would be the best thing to do with all the pollution is to just cancel school.
Just cancel it altogether. The government clearly run by a fifth grader who doesn't want to go into
school.
Well,
you see, I've got a military-styled mask here. This is a camouflage mask because we're in a military government right now. That's my little...
That's right. You have a prime minister who's a retired general and a songwriter who just dropped a track I was reading called In Memory last month, or this month, talking about how painful it was to live through the political instability before the government was run by the military or something. It's all very strange around here, but the good things about Bangkok, at least for the casual observer on my walk over to your place this morning, are still there. The air feels good, it's warm, the street food is amazing, we've got this Thai iced tea. This looks a lot like the Thai iced tea that we might have in the States. I mean, this is something that people in Bangkok actually drink for breakfast.
Like I was mentioning earlier on, it kind of gets better as the ice melts because it's so concentrated with sugar at the beginning that you kind of get a sense of you're going to become diabetic if you drink too many of these. But now the ice is melted, it's less sweet. I kind of like it better, actually.
The good news about Bangkok, even at the end of January, is the ice melts very quickly. It always has that going for it. So you are a filmmaker. You had mentioned the government, but one of the things that filmmakers have to reckon with in this country, in a lot of countries, is getting their work past the government. And that's been something that you've talked about with movies like The Last Executioner, which I just watched on Netflix. And I would imagine, especially with this movie coming out, The Cave, which is about the rescue of the Thai soccer team that had been stuck and the kind of captured the world's attention in their drama. So tell me about that movie and whether there's extra pressure because this is such an iconic Thai story and you've got to get it right and people are going to be watching.
Well, it's kind of the uncensored story. I mean, we're subject to censorship in that every Thai film has to be seen by the censor committee before they can show it in the cinemas. But we're able to make the film without passing the script through any government body. So this was the key to being able to make the film quickly, because as soon as you have to go through a committee, then you're talking about weeks or months of just procrastination. And this was really why I was able to jump on the story, was because I am a Thai national. I have a Thai passport. I'm living here and I have a Thai company. And technically, we were able to make the film as a Thai film. And of course, as you know, it was an international rescue effort. It wasn't just Governor Narongsak and a bunch of Thai SEALs. It was a multinational effort to get these boys out. And I think a lot of people don't realize how many foreigners were involved in actually extricating the boys from the cave. That was really the thing that surprised me even when I heard the story for the first time from one of the foreign divers. I was amazed at how little the Thai authorities had to do with the final plan. The final mission to extract them was almost entirely a foreign effort.
That's kind of fascinating, because one of the reasons why you wanted to make it quickly is because Hollywood has its sights on this film, and I guess the government here is waiting for that huge production company to come in, so they've put a lot of the characters and locations kind of off limits, even to you as a Thai director.
That was a challenge of making the film without permission, is that you don't have access to government agencies. You can't just say, hey, can we get a helicopter? You can't just say, can we go shoot in the cave? It was very difficult to get access, and we lobbied for months, and you know, we only recently were granted access because they ran out of excuses, and the government's now, you know, in their final throes, they've just announced an election. So in fact, the Ministry of Culture suddenly got on board the film and said, oh, well, you've already made the film. Yeah, we think we can probably make a phone call and see whether you can go in there and get some shots or whatever. And that came as a kind of a relief, because all this time we've been navigating through the bureaucracy of trying to do something which had government involvement. You know, no one wants to talk to you. It's a sensitive subject for the SEALs, that their lips are literally sealed. I mean, yeah. You know, you can't get accurate information from their side, but what you can do is talk to Americans, to the Brits, to the foreign divers. You can read about it now because they've all written books and they're coming out with more information. But you can get accurate information from the foreign participants because they're not controlled by the Thai government.
Right.
And that's really where my story comes in. I've got first-hand information from a lot of the unsung heroes of the rescue. So my film really concentrates on the untold stories of the unsung heroes.
You know, it's interesting when you talk about competition for this film. I had seen that John Chu, who directed Crazy Rich Asians, had tweeted out, you know, that
don't want them to whitewash the story. I'm not going to let them whitewash the story.
Right. But the story you're telling is a little white.
It's not that it's white. I mean, it's embedded in a Thai narrative. So the story takes place in the north of Thailand. So everyone speaks the language that they would have spoken at the time of the incident. So the northern Thai rice farmers, they speak in northern Thai. The Thai authorities, for the most part, speak in Thai language because they're on TV or they're talking to their military advisors. The foreign cast in the film, they do not speak Thai. They come and they speak the language of their nationality. So it's a multilingual, multinational film in a way, because we have a lot of foreigners. A lot of the foreign divers play themselves. So I have a Finnish diver. I've got a Canadian diver. We've got this Belgian,
it's
Irish.
It's a fictional movie, but these guys, it's a fictionalized version, but these guys are coming in and playing themselves in some cases.
It's based on a true story, and it's inspired by the real events, and it's the attention to detail is there, in that the divers would not have played themselves if they felt that they were doing something phony or they were like hamming it up, you know. So they play themselves because they are the most qualified participants of the film, because they were also the participants of the rescue.
It kind of brings up so many fascinating things, and this is part of the issue that we see in Hollywood when you have someone like John Chu, who's now a legit Hollywood power, is sort of coming in and saying,
a huge power,
saying, hey, we're not going to whitewash it. Meanwhile, he's the son of Taiwanese and Sichuan immigrants who grew up in Los Altos, and like, you have an Irish father and a Thai mother, but you're a Thai director. You live here. This is
your... I've made Thai films.
you make Thai films. All of your other films, the ones that you can find on Netflix, including Mindfulness and Murder,
are both in Thai language.
Both in Thai language. So it just, to me, it's really fascinating to think about how the version of your story, like you said, it's going to surprise Thai audiences how much there was foreign involvement, because that's not something they were even fed.
They saw the news on Thai TV. They saw it through Thai newspapers. You know, we in the rest of the world saw things unfold on CNN. We saw it unfold on whatever national news program was playing in the country where you were at the time of the rescue. It was international news. People were watching the news and their hearts were beating. It was kind of the only thing that mattered was, have they been found? Are they out of the cave yet? And when Saman Kunan passed away, this was like a huge thing, for not just for Thailand, because it was almost like everyone went into national mourning for this man who they didn't even know. But
this was the rescue diver who died.
He was actually an ex-Navy SEAL.
Okay.
And he became a symbol of the sacrifice that people had made. And he obviously paid the ultimate sacrifice and lost his life in the mission. So things became very somber. The mood of the nation was very somber for a few days before those boys came out, because a man had lost their life, and it was now, oh, it actually is really dangerous. You know, what are we going to do? The SEALs are some of the most qualified people that Thailand has, and even they couldn't survive the cave, you know. So it became like a real problem for the authorities here. It was like, how do we move forward, you know, without losing any more lives? And that's when they called on civilian divers to come and assist them. And it was civilian divers, you know, recreational cave divers that really helped to get these boys out, because they were the ones with the skills for this very specific set of circumstances.
The film that you have is in process. You have finished shooting. You're in production.
We're in post-production now.
Yeah. When is it going to the censors?
We would probably show the film to censors in April, when the film is kind of done.
After the March 24 election.
Well, luckily, there's an election called, and luckily it won't be Prayut's government, I don't think, censoring the film.
That's the songwriting ex-general prime minister, who you don't want to be in charge of sort of deciding whether you're upholding Thai dignity through your telling.
It's not really about Thai dignity. I think we do uphold Thai dignity, and there is a lot of patriotic symbolism in the film, and there's a lot of scenes which show Thai SEALs doing their job. But we were not given access to first-hand information of the operation from the Thai side. We have reports, and we know from the news, and we know from first-hand accounts of the foreigners what happened. But when it comes to the Thai story, I've centered on characters who are kind of bystanders or people not directly involved in the command chain, you know.
So there's one national story that had played out in the media with the certain characters that were well known, like the governor of Chiang Rai and so on. And that's not the story you're telling. And that's why you're concerned.
I tell the story of the rice farmers whose fields were flooded. I tell the story of a water pump engineer who can't get access to the cave because he hasn't got the right permit. You know, everywhere in Thailand, there's going to be someone who says you can't come in because you haven't got the right, you know, you haven't got the right visa, you haven't got the right paperwork. And that's something that's a theme that sort of comes out in the movie, is that, you know, it's the bureaucracy of Thailand actually made it very difficult for people to help, local people to help, because there were no names. They came along and they just were like, oh, I've got a water pump, I want to help. And they're like, sorry, you can't come in, you don't have the right permit to be in here. How do you get in? Whereas the foreigners were welcomed with open arms because they had specialist skills that the Thais maybe didn't have. For example, cave diving is a very specific skill. You know, you always go in with two cylinders, not one. You know, you can't just come up like open water diving when you need air. You need to have an extra tank in case you run out of oxygen. So this is kind of one of the things that they saw when Saman died, was like, hey, we need specialist skilled divers for this. Even our own guys aren't going to make it. So they welcomed them to come and help in the final hand of bringing them out. And in fact, those boys were extracted only by foreign divers. I mean, the 13 foreign divers who were involved in that final plan, they weren't Thai. They had come from all over the planet. There was a Finnish diver who flew from Malta. There was a Belgian diver who flew from Ireland. There was a Canadian diver who usually teaches on Koh Tao, and he came up to help in the rescue. So it was kind of like recruiting the Avengers, you know, but these guys were just civilians. They were people who didn't have commanders. They didn't have any military person in charge of them. So it was really a remarkable effort that was played out by normal people. And I think that's what's the most fascinating thing about the rescue, and what's really incredible in the film, is to see the selflessness of these guys who dropped everything to get on a plane and come to Thailand. And some of them had no links to Thailand at all. All they saw was the boys on the news and the news of the diver who passed away. And they said, I need to be there, I can help.
So you won't have a scene in there of Elon Musk in his hyperbaric chamber tweeting out, you're a pedophile, to one of these volunteer divers?
Well, you know, people keep asking who's playing Elon Musk. And I kind of say to people, well, actually, Elon Musk he's not played by anyone. He's a real person. So we allude to the fact that he tried to help. And we have his tweets in the film. Not that tweet, but the submarine is something that we acknowledge. And we don't sort of shy away from saying, listen, everyone on the planet had an interest in this story and wanted to help the kids, including people like Elon Musk. And it just so happens that one of our characters that we follow ran into a guy from SpaceX, you know, so that character's in the movie. So in fact, we do acknowledge that it happened, but we just don't, we stay away from, you know, the more controversial aspects of a guy sending him a tweet.
Or, right. Or, Elon Musk's meltdown should not be kind of melting all over your film.
I think it's distracting.
Yeah. Yeah. When you look at this story of the kind of selflessness of the international community and the volunteerism of the Thai community and how they came together, and ultimately, despite the diver who passed away, this was a success story. Is that something that kind of gravitates to you? Like, good things come out of the product of overseas in Thai?
Because we know what happens at the beginning of the film. You know, and we see in the film the boys getting stuck in the cave. We know what happens at the end, that they come out. If you read the news, you know that they all survived. But how do you make that into an interesting film? Because you know the beginning, you know the ending. It's the middle bit that we're really interested in. It's like, how do those boys come out alive? And how did those other divers not die? And I think the heart of the movie is the mission to bring out the 13 alive. And in fact, you know, a lot of people have dubbed the rescue, you know, 13 Alive would be a great, you know, name for the movie or whatever. And in fact, the film Alive about the Andes crash,
yeah,
which the film came out in the 90s, that kind of inspired me to do this story, because that film,
I remember that fucked me up, man. That was an amazing,
yeah,
film.
I mean, you know, it was an amazing film. It's kind of morally ambiguous because it sort of says, yeah, you know, these guys had to eat each other to survive, because that's just biology, that's just like nature, that's how you have to survive. You can't starve or else you'll die. So what do you do when you have to eat your friends? I mean, that's what these kids were thinking when they're in there. They're like, hey, we might have to eat each other, you know, we're not going to be able to survive, we don't have to. But actually, that's not really what my film centers on, because I didn't have access to the kids, so the film doesn't center on their story. And that's what I think Hollywood is running around trying to get, is the rights to the kids' story, so they can do, you know, a Goonies-type version of events and have the kids going into the cave and then seeing what they're doing in the dark and meditating and the coach training them to, you know, how to stay alive. So the Staying Alive movie, that someone else can... John Chusha can do that one.
Good.
Yeah, he can
go,
do that.
Go get it.
You know, he can decide whether he wants to do it in Thai language or he wants to whitewash it and do it in English.
Let me ask you about kind of the state of Thai cinema these days and kind of what you're seeing out
there. It's horrible. I'm a judge for the Thai Film Awards. So I have to watch a lot of, you know, I watch 45 Thai movies to assess them for, you know, awards potential. And luckily there were four or five movies that really stood out. But the quality of the films in Thailand is getting, because of the budget size, because basically the box office share of Thai films is tiny now compared to what Marvel movies make. You know, The Avengers is like box office king. You know, Aquaman is king,
right,
of the box,
well,
office.
Well, as you mentioned, The Last Executioner, which came out right after the coup, your Thai language film came out right with Planet of the Apes.
Yeah, it was sandwiched between two Leviathan Hollywood releases in the summer. So we had, you know, a monkey riding a horse on one poster and a dinosaur fighting a robot on the other. And it was very painful to see that film, which I'd spent a year making.
It's a beautiful film, by the way. I would recommend everybody watch it. It's just
so The Last Executioner is relegated to being that film that came out for a week and no one saw it. But luckily, you can see it on Netflix.
But some of those same dynamics are causing issues, I guess, in Thai cinema now. Just not enough budgets, not enough attention to it.
I think that's why this film hopefully will change things, in that it'll be a Thai film that people see overseas, I hope, because I think it has the subject matter that everyone is interested in. And that's really the key to any film, really. If you want people to see, if you want bums on seats, you better make a story that people are interested in seeing. Usually with my film, no one's interested in the filming of it. No one's interested in financing the films. And with this film, it's kind of the polar opposite. Like, people are super interested in what we're doing, super interested in even, you know, one photo from the set. People went crazy because they were like, oh, that's that big Thai actor. I wonder what he's playing. Maybe he's playing the wrong side. And they went crazy with their imaginations. They didn't even fact check. They just kind of posted it and said, yeah, this guy's the lead in the film. In fact, he has a cameo, but he's not the lead at all, but he's just very famous here. So it's kind of that interest in my new movie. It's so unprecedented because I'm so used to kind of making movies in the dark and no one knowing what I'm doing, and no one even seeing the films. And this one could be a game changer in that people might actually go see the film. Fingers crossed.
I mean, that's a hell of an argument for a national cinema, right? Like, you deserve the right to tell your own stories in your own way. And when Hollywood takes all the oxygen out of the room, then a lot of countries are left not able to do that.
Well, the best thing that the Thai government did was let me make the film. They didn't stop me. And I think that was the key to getting it done, was not being stopped. They didn't give me any permission to do it because there was no procedure. Because Thai filmmakers, they make the films and then they go and censor them before they get shown. But, you know, with a foreign film, you have to go through a committee. So John Chu will have to go through that committee. He'll have to make sure that the film doesn't overly dramatize the story, that it doesn't affect the lives of the kids after the film comes out, and it doesn't sensationalize, and it doesn't stray from the truth. And all that kind of stuff is going to be the government's problem, is dealing with how to make the story the way that they want it. You know, basically, they're going to control the rights of the kids and make sure that the story goes the way that they want it to be told. Whereas my version is kind of the uncensored version. And we'll have to wait and see in March when, or April, when the film goes through the censors to see what ends up being in the film and not.
I just flew in from New York about 8 hours ago. You're taking an international flight now. I'm pretty excited.
Yeah, I'm doing jury service, so I have to go and watch about 15 movies in 3 days and decide who's,
I'm really excited that we got to cross paths and even for a brief time, and I cannot wait to see this film and all the ones that you continue to make out here. Thanks, Tom.
Thank you very much.
The Trip is hosted by me, Nathan Thornburg, produced by Roads and Kingdoms. Taffy Mokanyadze is our editor and is way nicer on Twitter than Elon Musk. Emily Marinoff is our producer. Music by Dan the Automator, artwork by Adele Rodriguez. Executive producers are me and Matt Goulding, also of Roads and Kingdoms. Next week, we're up in Chiang Mai with an old friend of mine, the author, cook, and traveler, Naomi Duga. We'll meet you there.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.